We're backstage at the Arlington Park Theater for a visit with the star of Charlie's Aunt, Louis Nye. Hi-ho, Louis.
Hi, how are you, Chuck?
Just great and happy to be back here at the,
You like my dressing room with the lovely striped walls, the paper, the wallpaper? This is one of the cleanest and nicest dressing rooms I've had.
It's amazing. I've been in a few dressing rooms, too, and mostly they're about one-eighth the size of this.
That's right. The old theaters, many times they forget about dressing rooms. The chorus is downstairs near the radiators.
Many people will say that Louis Nye was born on the great old Steve Allen show on TV, but I suspect that Louis Nye simply came of age on that series. When were you born, theatrically speaking?
I don't know. When television happened, when television started, I was at that time doing a couple of Broadway plays, and I didn't care too much for that time because, you know, in a play, you never knew what would happen. You open and then close suddenly. So I shifted my love to television. And now that I have the leisure from television, I will occasionally do Charlie's Aunt on the road.
You do anything else besides Charlie's Aunt once in a while?
Oh, no. That's enough.
That's a Louis Nye tailor-made show.
It's that, and I do other personal appearances. You know, I'm coming back here. I'll be at the, I'm only saying this to show the ways that I step around, and I'll go to Lake Geneva for the Playboy for 9 days, and then I go home and stay there.
For a little while until you get
until
another
assignment. And then I'll do, that's what it is. It's two or three television shows, a few talk shows, then off to Vegas, then back again to do some more television, and then off to do a nightclub again, and back to do television, then a play, and the next thing you know, another year has gone by.
Mm-hmm. What about radio? I think you did a little bit of radio work.
Yeah,
back.
I love radio today. I did a show at CBS when I was doing the Steve Allen show, and it turned out to be a very comforting, wonderful way of life. And I started playing records and chatting with the unknown audience, a little disc jockey show. It wasn't a traditional disc jockey show, but I played records and talked.
Didn't you do a little dramatic radio, though, way back?
Oh, yeah, I did that before. But then, and the radio show that I did on my own, I prefer that very much. I liked it. And little by little, it got to be a point where where CBS at that time wanted me to stay, and I had to think seriously of leaving Steve because he was moving to California, and I didn't know whether it would be more fun and profit for me to stay in New York and nurse the and build my life around the radio show. You see how fate is, you know. You never know what to do, but as it were, I went with Steve when he went to California, and he moved me out lock, stock, and barrel. And I bought a house, brought my family out there, and I've been living there ever since.
How did you first make that connection with Steve Allen?
Well, he saw me on a third floor of NBC in New York. And I saw this tall man with horn-rimmed glasses, and he said to me, I saw you on something the other night and liked it very much. I'll be doing a show in a couple of weeks, I think we may start, or maybe a month from now, but anyway, it's nice meeting you. And I said, and your name? He said, my name's Steve Allen. I shook hands warmly with him. And he said, bye, man, dig you later. And I went around asking people. I said, I met a tall guy named Steve Allen. He says, going to do a show, and he's going to use me. Isn't that nice? And other people say, gee, I don't know. And I finally met somebody at one of the networks, and they say, oh, yes, he's a very clever guy from California. I had not heard of him before, you see. So since then we started, and sure enough, when the time came, Chuck, he called me, and I became immediately associated with him.
And that association has lasted all these years, because every once in a while you're involved with something.
That's right. We pop up together. We do crazy things, like we went recently to Boston for the Boston Pops Orchestra. And I flew in with him. I kept saying to him on the plane, well, I know what you're going to do. They're going to play your songs with beautiful arrangements. But what am I going to do? He said, well, something will come up. I had no script, you know. He said, something, you'll see. It'll be all right. Relax. Enjoy yourself. He said, there's some good restaurants in Boston. And then the next morning, I said, we're going over now. I said, hit me. Tell me. What's going to be? What am I going to do? He said, you'll see. And that's the way we went on the air. But he's a master at doing... he can just walk on the street and stop and talk to people and do remarkable things. And at this affair that we went to in Boston for the Boston Pops, which is truly a lovely organization, you know, people come there and they drink wine and coffee and beer and watch a man conduct lovely music. You know, they don't get terribly involved in Verdi, I imagine, or Wagner or something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they play lovely music. And people just adore the man. He's a fine conductor. Fiedler, you know, Arthur Fiedler. Yes. So I got such a delight being there with Steve and doing our thing together on NET, you know. And I think you come to a point in your life where you look more for delightful things to do or something that'll give you a kick rather than just a job. Because, you see, a performer must be inspired. And once you lose that, nothing happens with you. That's why I must move in all mediums. I must stand alone and entertain in a nightclub or be in a play. I was kidding you before. Mm-hmm. There will be other plays. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Look at them. It's not even a matter of money as much as it was at one time, because I don't think any performer, if a performer gives up in his work, he's done. Because you must get the creative juices to work. And I don't think you can get them to work on television as much as you can in a nightclub or in a theater. And the reason for that is that you do a television show once and it's gone. Mm-hmm. But a nightclub, you get back the next few hours and you repeat it again. So that's why you can grow. It's like a dancer doing steps and does them over and over till they're right. You know?
You can immediately respond to the audience's reaction. If it's a good reaction, exactly. You can go with it. Or if
yes.
it's a bad reaction, you can kill it, too.
Because, you know, on television, you can do the ludicrous, worst thing in the world, and there'll be a laugh track in the back of you to goad you on. Or somebody will say, don't worry about it. It's cute. We'll put in a little thing there.
Yeah.
You know? Now, that's false, you see? So what do you learn from that? That's why there's such a great rate of failure to a lot of people that leave their comfortable television and series and go out and troupe or get involved in a nightclub or a play and find out a terrible thing, that it's a little different.
All right, now the act that you're going to do at the Playboy Club, now what is the opening date on that?
It's not terrible. It's December 9th, I think, or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure, talk about it in the paper.
Well, at any rate, now you're gonna open there, and what kind of an act will you do there? Will it be?
I don't know how to describe it. It's a stand-up act.
Uh-huh. Well, will we have some of those routines that you that you did on recording?
No, they're all different than that. Uh-huh. Some of them are based on some of the stuff, but not very much of it. It's all different. It's. You know, as the years go on, you get other areas to do.
Yeah.
And at that time, some of the things were censorable, that you couldn't do those on television or on a record. I guess you can do anything today. So it's it takes on a different feeling. You see, when you work in one and you have your you as a person, you're standing there, it's entirely different than doing something for a radio.
Mm-hmm.
Because radio is a vocal thing. You can time things, you know, pauses and innuendos and stuff and color to your wordage, but it's entirely different than a nightclub act. You're in one, and people see you from your shoes to your sagging eyes.
Well, you skipped over radio just a moment ago, and you mentioned it again now, and I dug back into the archives of the golden age of radio, if you will, mm-hmm. and found your name listed in a cast list of a radio series called Official Detective.
Oh, yeah. Official Detective. I played Sergeant Gibbons, I think it was.
Sergeant, yeah. You were the detective sergeant on
right,
the show with
right.
Ed Begley, I think.
No.
Or Craig
Ned
McDonald.
Weaver.
Ned Weaver.
Ned Weaver, yeah. And then there was another one with Craig McDonald.
Yeah.
Right.
Craig McDonald. Yeah, how long did you do that thing?
Oh, for years. Yeah. I did that once a week. That was my steady call, and I'd go down there. I love that. Gosh, you know, it was such an imaginative thing, all done vocally, mm-hmm. and you take little steps around, and there was a sound man there, and he'd open the door for you, you know, and the hall, he'd put on the echo chamber, uh-huh. and he'd say, they went this way, Inspector. I think they're about over here now. You want me to go in?
No, wait for me, Gubbins. I'll be right there.
And I think radio is a perfectly marvelous instrument for drama. Just the other day, I was down south, and I had a radio in my room, and I tuned something in, and I heard an English, The Rivals, with Sir Ralph Richardson. Mm-hmm. How it ever got down there, I don't know, but it was there.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of the things, you see, BBC today is still broadcasting original comedy and drama on radio, and some of those things are filtering into this country, and occasionally you can hear some of those things. And, of course, we're doing a little bit of reminiscing, too, as we play some of the old Chicago
I'll have to
Chicago
hear your program.
Radio shows. Yeah, tune in.
I promise I will.
Some of the good old days.
I used to do an occasional shot on Gangbusters and District Attorney. How was that opening in District Attorney?
Mr. District Attorney was...
And
it shall be my duty as District Attorney.
Yes. Jay Jocelyn.
Jay Jocelyn.
Right,
Jay and Gangbusters had the siren and the marching feet and all the squad cars and things.
Well,
like
I always played two parts on that. It'd be the first part would be an emotional gangster getting caught, and then on page 12 to 24, I'd be... one of the attorneys.
Could we hear the emotional gangster getting caught? Give us a nickel's worth of old-time radio, a la Louis Nye.
I used to play, at that time, emotional juveniles. You know, I say, it's hard to start off. I say. You have to have music in the background. You know, I say. Look, I didn't mean what I did, Tony. I just came into the money was there, and I took it, but I was going to give it back. You see, I was going to give it to you. Back, Tony. And it was over. Then I waited and then went on at page 24 to do the other thing.
The other one was, apparently the three men walked into the place was not locked. Was that locked, Inspector?
No, I don't think it was.
You got all these people moving around and doors opening and closing.
Well, there was a time when a lot of the actors would double and triple in the in the roles, I guess, before the union stepped in and said, hey, you can only have a couple
that's
of them
right,
doing
dude,
that.
That's right, you just do two. One and a your part and a double.
Uh-huh.
That was the
uh-huh.
thing. But in the at that bad little funny stations, you know, you did everything. Come on, you arrest yourself and you talk to yourself in the same script, you know. Like I did in the record when I did the hipster getting a loan at the bank.
Yeah.
So he talked... You did everything, and you started that way in smaller stations. You know, WTIC.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
the place that
that's
I started.
That's in
Hartford.
Hartford.
Uh-huh. Right, yeah.
You'll be happy to know that WTIC in Hartford is stepping back into time a little bit and does indeed play a lot of the great radio programs from the past.
Is that right?
Weekly, yeah.
Well, next time I'm in Hartford, I shall put on a black cape.
Say hello to Ed Corcoran out there at WTIC,
right?
Fine. Let's zip back to a little more recent times in the television. Right. And in addition to the Steve Allen thing, you just were on almost every type of variety show. But I remember another series that you appeared on occasionally that challenged your imagination and your comic genius, and it was called Keep Talking. It was a kind of a panel show with two or three... personalities on there, and you
do research. You're the only one of the few people that do research around.
Well, I'm kind of interested in you.
And keep talking, right?
It was a somebody would start the round with a
yes,
the idea of a
up.
Story, and
right.
then you would take it for a paragraph or two, and that's then another right. one did. And I think Peggy Cass was on that.
Right. There was also another show called a very strange show called Make Me Laugh. That was on at I think it was CBS, written by a friend of mine named Mort Green, and he would get a celebrity, some famous Broadway actor or an actress, and they had three comedians in the back, and they'd come out one at a time and do terrible things to make a person laugh. And one time I had one on, and his name was the Latin band leader, married at one time to Abby Lane.
Xavier Cugat.
And Xavier Cugat was on there, and he was very grim because the idea was not to laugh. And I came on and said, Xavier, this voice that you are hearing now is your English teacher. You remember me? He just went to pieces. And I double talked to him. I said, Xavier, Huerta Carana Masendera Porondo Capanereda, you know, your English teacher to tell you the right words before you come to the United States. You remember me? I hope you do. And I walked out there, and he broke up, and that was it. So I won for that day. But, of course, the funnier areas of that show is when you'd stand out there and nothing would happen with some grim-faced lady that was winning $300, you know. She just bit her lips and just held on, just wouldn't. I remember all kinds of people went on to do that show. It was a marvelous show. But, strangely enough, people felt sorry for you home. You know, I'd say, oh, guy, he's not doing it tonight. But the idea was a funny idea. In fact, I heard that it might even be revived again to get another whack at it.
Could be. I heard the talk of bringing back Can You Top This?
Oh,
the
yes.
old radio
oh,
show.
Sure.
I did a little
yeah.
TV thing on it, yeah. and they were going to yeah. come back with a panel of wits again.
That's right.
And that conceivably could go.
I think it could, yeah. I think it could.
In the access time or something like
well,
that.
Well, some of those shows are spontaneous enough to be very amusing, and the audience gets in with it. And fun. It's fun.
It's fun, too, to come out to the Arlington Park Theater and see Louie Nye starring in Charlie's Aunt. You'll be here till the 5th of November, and
right.
then you'll zip around the country a little bit and be back up at the Playboy Club
at the
in Lake
Playboy
Geneva in December.
December, right. And if you're around,
I sincerely mean, Chuck, bring a friend, you'll be my guest.
Well, thank you very much, good. Louie and I. We'll be seeing you then and seeing you out here, and thanks for sharing some memories.